professor-student relationships are not new. They've led to marriages. They've also led to charges of abuse of power. And now an increasing number of schools are banning them, including Stanford, Harvard, Yale, the College of William & Mary, and Northwestern University. And when Northwestern professor Laura Kipnis criticized her school's ban in an essay in the Chronicle of Higher Education, it was met with outrage by students, two of whom filed Title IX lawsuits against her, claiming she was retaliating against students who'd filed a complaint against a professor. In the essay, Kipnis does reference two suits by a Northwestern student who charged first that the school mishandled her complaint against a professor and then that the teacher violated the Illinois Gender Violence Act. Now, Kipnis didn't name the players, but said that bans on professor-student relationships, even bad ones, assume professors are predators and that they infantilize students. She was ultimately cleared of the suits against her. We'll link you to her articles at hereandnow.org. As Professor Kipnis joins us now, welcome.
Hi, thanks.
Well, quite a thing that you launched with this original essay. Do you think, though, that you went too far? Let me read a portion where you say, "When I was in college, hooking up with professors was more or less part of the curriculum. This was back when sex, even not so great, or when people got their feelings hurt, fell under the category of life experience." You know, in light of the fact that some young women felt that they have been, you know, coerced and maybe even assaulted by professors, was that too light a tone?
Well, for one thing, I think the real problem with sexual assault on campuses is student-to-student rather than professor-student. So there's a kind of misplaced, you know, energy here to some extent. And there already have been in our harassment codes, conduct codes like that on campuses. So I did think the outright ban went too far, although I guess I've been thinking about it in retrospect. It's not that I think my tone was wrong. And one of the things I've been, thinking about and catching up on has to do with the changes in the time that I grew up and now. And I think there just is much more of a sense of endangerment and imperilment hanging over sexual relations.
Well, yeah, you talk about you were the lucky generation that came of age in a time just after the sexual revolution was launched. It was before AIDS turned sex into a crime scene. But I think you're talking about something more. You're talking about this sense of, as you say, victim and survivor.
And also this idea that predators are everywhere and that the, you know, professors are all would-be predators if there weren't these codes. So even the way the codes are written, you know, I use the term melodrama in the initial article, and this idea that there are these innocent victims and then these predatory professors. There's something, just if you read these codes as narratives, that seems surprising and objectionable to me.
You also say that you've been seeing this coming for about a decade as colleges began instituting offensive environment guidelines, saying things like you were permitted to date undergrads, but just not harass them, be careful of inappropriate humor. You were actually okay with the don't harass people.
Well, absolutely.
Yeah.
Should go without saying, I am against sexual harassment. I mean, I'm against quid pro quo kinds of things where a professor would say, you know, sleep with me for a grade, all of that. But what had also started happening was this idea that something you would say in a classroom might make somebody feel offended to the extent that you would be called into, like, the dean's office.
Like a bad joke.
And that, yeah. And it's really continued. There's been a lot of talk about what gets called trigger warnings, that we're supposed to warn students in advance if something might potentially offend them, like a film you would show.
Well, you see, you give examples of students who have said to you, I can't see certain films, and you are a radio, TV, and film instructor because it will trigger something in them.
It started happening about a year ago, and I was kind of befuddled. That had never happened before. And then the next week I saw an article in the New York Times talking about trigger warnings and that they were a contagion, I guess. And, you know, I started thinking, well, they kind of caught this sensitivity from the internet, you know, and that it was sweeping the country. So I do think it's partly the climate, these online discussions that have increased a student's sense of vulnerability. So I don't think it's in the end good for students to be that oversensitive. What happens when you're, you know, out of school and out in the world?
Well, there's that issue. But then you just mentioned something I want to back up to. People using their position of power to coerce students or to trade a grade for a date. Isn't that exactly what a ban prevents? You can say you're against it, but it's hard to define. And isn't it possible that there's a case where a professor can be coercing somebody or can be somehow subtly withholding a grade or a teaching experience, and a young person might not know what to do? Wouldn't a ban even just eliminate that possibility?
I think it's true there are these murky situations. But once again, I think this presupposes that you've got these legions of professors trying to coerce students, into having sex. And I do think students could stand to be far better educated and develop sophistication on when people are trying to play them and what to do about it.
Well, let's talk about the response. Students protesting, launching lawsuits against you. How did you feel about that?
I was pretty surprised. I hadn't sexually assaulted anyone. I was writing as a feminist, and it was a publication. So I did think the students, had kind of overplayed their hand.
So you say you were speaking as a feminist, but many of the women and men who protested you feel they are feminist as well, that they are standing up for the rights of women. And one particular issue that they had was that you didn't name any names, but you did outline a case between a professor and a student that anybody familiar with it would have been able to figure out who it was. And they said that that had a chilling effect on a student's ability to report sexual misconduct. Do you think you went too far in talking specifically about that case?
Well, having now been through a 72-day Title IX investigation about exactly that question, the finding was that no reasonable person could think that the article I wrote had a chilling effect on anybody's ability to report sexual misconduct. So, no, I don't think that, and I think it was an overreaction. And I actually think it was in some ways in bad faith, because I think it was politically motivated exactly by people who have a different kind of politics about feminism than I do. But I don't think it was literal. I think it was an attempt to shut down an opposing point of view.
Do you think that any of the people who protested you could have a sincere belief that there needs to be more protection for students from relationships that could endanger them, endanger their education?
I sure understand that there are sincere concerns, but I think it goes back to what I was talking about before. We were talking about this climate of vulnerability. And, there's only so far you can go in protecting people's vulnerabilities. To some degree, being in the world and having experiences means wending your way through, difficult situations. And my worry is that students aren't learning to do that to the extent they think these codes protect them or will protect them for life.
Well, in fact, what you say is there you may have a disastrous relationship with a professor, and that's part of life, learning how to pick yourself up after a failed relationship.
Sure. And I think one of the reasons I talked about or, made reference to my own past as a student wasn't so much to brag about how many professors I'd nailed, but just to say, that was part of my formation as an intellectual, as a woman, as a feminist. And, making mistakes is part of life.
And you are still very much against a ban on relationships between professors and undergrad students.
Well, I do think in situations where somebody clearly has power over someone else in terms of grading or whatever. But I do also think that it's people misunderstand the kind of power that professors have, and I think students misunderstand it too. In one of the cases I wrote about, an undergrad charge that a professor had forced her to drink. And if any student thinks a professor has the power to force her to drink, then they are just misunderstanding the nature of institutional power. And again, we've got this idea of professors as these all-powerful predators. The reality is most decisions about things like funding are made by committees. Yes, you have the power to grade a student. The student always has, channels of recourse for that. So, this portrait of the all-powerful professor is a bit melodramatic.
Well, but it's, if I may, it's not just the professor or somebody who might grade you. It's an authority figure it's someone who's older. Young people may not have yet formed the notion that you can say no to somebody who's an authority figure, whether it's a professor or a boss. That's why there are firewalls.
You know, I quoted Jane Gallup, who's an English professor, wrote a book called Feminist Accused of Sexual Harassment. She said something related to, which is that you actually learn something by doing that, which is not to take power so seriously. And you learn that these people are, you know, people just like you and vulnerable just like you. So I think that there's just this vast misunderstanding and exaggeration of power in ways that make me think we're not giving our students a good enough education about power and its limits.
That's Laura Kipnis, professor in the Department of Radio, Television, and Film at Northwestern University, author of My Title IX Inquisition and Sexual Paranoia Strikes Academe. And they're both in the Chronicles of Higher Education. We'll link you at hereandnow.org. By the way, she's also author of the recent book Men, Notes from an Ongoing Investigation. Professor Laura, thank you.
Thanks so much.